Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a guy who had his first multifamily deal and his house both flooded during Hurricane Harvey and learn what he did to pivot, you are going to want to hear what Ben Suttles has to say. This guy not only figured a way out of tragedy, he has skyrocketed in the industry ever since. Before we jump into the intro, I want to let you know about a couple conferences coming up. The Multifamily Investor Nation Summit, put on by Dan Hanford, is coming up on January 21st through the 23rd. It's a three-day online event for multifamily investors with over 1,000 attendees and over 50 speakers. I actually will be one of those speakers. Go to MFINsummit.com to grab your ticket and use promo code Darin, D-A-R-I-N, all caps, to get $100 off. Dan was on the show, episode 25, great guy and great event. The second conference I want to bring to your attention is a conference being held in Houston on February 27th, 2021, and is being hosted by Ferris Musa and Ben Suttles from Disrupt Equity and Kenny Wolf with Wolf Investments. All three of these guys have been on the show. Ferris, episode 11, Kenny, episode 24, and Ben, episode 28. Use code DISRUPT for your discount. Both great opportunities to learn more about the multifamily investing space. Hope to see you there. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darin Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing. Be introduced to the players that are getting it done and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darin Batchelder.
A little background on Ben Suttles before we start the show. Ben lives in the Houston area. He comes from a sales and development background in the tech space. He started investing in real estate in 2013, and he and his business partner now have over $100 million of assets under management. This guy has lofty goals. They want to purchase 10 deals for over 2,000 units in the year 2021. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. We've got a special guest here today. We've got Ben Suttles here with us today. Ben, appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Darin. I appreciate the invite, man. Hopefully I can offer a little bit of value to your listeners today.
Absolutely. So before we get started, just a little bit on how I know Ben. I actually had Ben's business partner on episode 11, Ferris Musa, and the two of them formed a company called Disrupt Equity. And I first came in contact with the two of them, I don't know, it's probably a couple of years back. They came up, they're both in the Houston area. They both came up to the Dallas area, which is where I live. And I attended a meetup group that they were putting on, and it was a very well attended meetup group. And, they were there speaking. I think it might have been Kenny Wolf's group, and you guys.
Oh, that was that one. Yeah,
and you guys were speaking at that, and you guys talked about a couple properties that you guys did very well on, and I met some great people at that event. And so from that point on, we connected on social media, and I've been kind of watching these guys, and they're players in the space, and you know they're people that I want to look up to, and I want to learn from. And so I hope that you guys learn from him today. So, hey, before we get started, Ben, can you just share with us how many properties and how many units you guys currently have?
Yeah, so we currently have 7 properties in Texas. We have 4 in Texas, 3 in Georgia. We've also sold 3, 1 in Georgia and 2 in Texas. So currently we have about 1,500 units. Target for next year, which was supposed to be our 2020 goal, is now our 2021 goal, is another 2,000 units. So
2,000 units for next year?
Yeah, we're hopeful to buy 10 properties next year.
So, wow.
You know, it's going to be a wild ride, but we're bullish that we can pull it off.
You know, this is something that we talk about a lot. When you go from single family to multifamily, you know, the biggest word I hear people talk about is scale, scale, scale. You know, when in single family, you get to 10, 15 single family properties and it just starts to be very hard to manage. And so people start to look at multifamily as a way to go up. But buying 10 properties in a year, that is some, and doubling the number of units or more, that is some serious scale. So talk to me about that.
So, you know, I mean, you have to have the right team to pull this off, everybody. I mean, I have to, you know, I can't say that it's the Ben and Ferris show. You know, we have asset managers, we have analysts, we have our own property management company now. You know, we also have insurance and financing in-house too. So we've vertically integrated over the last couple of years and brought on a team of people that really help us kind of pull that off. Because if it was just me or if it was just Ferris, that would be a very, very daunting task to do, right? But, you know, over the last few years, as we've gotten into the business and kind of matured in the business, right, you know, we've just cultivated a lot of broker relationships. And they know what we're looking for. They know where we're looking for it at. And I think we get a fair amount of deal flow. I mean, we're looking at 20 deals a week. You know, we're making 5 or 10 offers a month, if not more. And so, you know, and it's all about numbers. So you can almost kind of back into, okay, if you want to buy 10 deals, how many deals do you really need to look at? I probably need to look at 500 to 1,000 deals next year.
That's crazy.
So, you know, we are going to just completely open up our funnel in the markets that we're in, as well as a couple of new markets that we're going to be in. We're in Georgia and Texas right now. We like Florida. We like Phoenix. And we like North and South Carolina. So what we're doing right now, what we've been doing the last quarter, is just cultivating those broker relationships, you know, and so whenever they have that, it gets aggregated into our funnel, right? And then from there goes into an underwriting process, right? So we've got not only analysts here in Houston where we're headquartered at, but we also have VAs that do a lot of our, you know, kind of day-to-day, either data input. They don't really do the analysis piece. I feel like that's something that I always want to keep a pulse on, but they'll do the data entry. And then it kind of goes through a, you know, kind of a vetting process and an analysis process. And then it percolates up to me and Ferris. And we have, you know, 2 or 3 meetings a week where all we're doing and all we're talking about is deals that we're looking at. Analysis, where do we make an offer at, when are call for offers, and then making sure that we're doing that. Because ultimately, we let our foot off the pedal this year because of COVID, as a lot of people did.
Sure.
But we see a ton of opportunity now that, you know, the vaccine's coming out. You know, we got past the election, or, you know, who knows, it's still a little bit contested, but I think we all kind of know who the winner is going to be. Right. And so some of the, I guess, the uncertainty that was kind of keeping us out of the market for a while is no longer there. Right. And interest rates are still low and we have a ton of equity that's sitting on the sidelines. So we need good deals that we could deploy that capital into. And so, you know, we essentially said, well, we'll open up the floodgates. Still kind of stick to our box, right? I'm not going to just go buy a deal just to buy a deal.
Sure.
You know, because it just opens yourself up to a lot of problems. You know, but if you have these teams in place and you have your funnel and your deal flow coming in, you know, I mean, I've seen people, I'm not going to name names because you probably know them, but there's a guy that we know that, you know, is under contract for 5 deals right now. So yeah, there's deals out there. You just have to, you have to have the initiative, you have to have the contacts, and you have to have the equity and the team to back you up to actually pull it off.
That's a great, great point. So talk about the deals, and you have analysts, it sounds like, mm-hmm. that the deal flow comes into them, they analyze the deals, they take the data from the OM and the T12 and they put it into your underwriting. Mm-hmm. And then once or twice a week, you guys end up having a meeting with deals that kind of passed their first test. Is that how it works? So they kick out a bunch of deals and then they only present the ones that they think may be of interest to you guys?
So think of it, anybody that's in corporate Maryland, anybody that's been in sales, I come from a sales and business development background. So I look at it like this is just another pipeline, right? You know, that we have to fill with potential opportunities instead of sales that we're going to make, right? We're buying things in this example. But the way that it works from our standpoint is, you know, obviously OMs and T12s flow in. Our VAs will do the data entry. They will also pull CoStar reports and other reports, crime statistics, and they all put this into Asana. We're moving to Zoho.
Puts it into what?
Asana, which is our project management tool that we're currently using for our pipeline. But we're moving to another one, which will be a little bit more robust. And they do their piece. Then it moves to our stateside analysts, right? So all of the heavy lifting, all the things that take people a long time to actually do analysis, which is the data input, taking things from the T12 and putting it into the analyzer and all these other things and pulling reports.
Yeah.
That's already done, right? So now all of our analysts doing is verifying and then making the assumptions that go along in our box, right? You know, what are we going to do for rent growth in these areas? What are we going to do as far as expenses? You know, where are we popping taxes at and insurance, you know, verifying numbers at that point, right? Because they don't do any of the analysis. All the VAs do is the data entry. Then the analysts do the analysis, right? And then they put it into a box where it's either, yeah, this is junk. We're not even going to look at this because it doesn't fit our, you know, our returns.
Sure.
Or it does, and we need to look at this, or it's really good, and we need to look at this right now. Because what was happening was we put it into the, yeah, this is a good deal, but what we'd find out is, that was a great deal. And then we try to make an offer, and it would already be gone.
It's too late.
It's too late because, you know, even on off-market deals, as much as I'd like to say that these guys are only sending it to me and everybody always says that, oh, I'm the only one that looked at this.
Right. You know, right. I've heard that before.
That's not true. You right. know, you're always at least 3 to 5 buying groups that they might like, but you are not the only person.
No.
And so, you know, we know that there's 3 or 5 other people that are doing the same analysis as us. And if they're faster than us, they're going to wrap it up quicker. And we've lost deals in the past. And we said, no, not again. So we have an escalation point, right, at that point where it's like, if it goes into this tranche of returns, then you need to escalate it to us. And we're going to talk about it that week. Right. You know, and so it systematizes the deal flow process.
Sure.
And really I have to give kudos where kudos is due. I'm the sales guy. Ferris is the process and the IT guy. So he put a lot of this in place, but it has made our process a lot more, I guess, efficient.
Yeah.
And, that's huge. You know, and so that's how we're gonna pull off that scale and you know, in 2021. But also, you know, it goes back to, you know, to pull that off, you have to have deal flow, right? So deals is one part of the equation. The other part of the equation that you have to have is you have to have equity, right? And so you also, you have to have, it's always that cart before the horse. Should you have the deal or should you have the money? I always say you can't have just one, right? Because we talked about this a little bit earlier, right? If you don't have anything to deploy somebody's capital into, they're going to go to the next deal. They're going to go to the next syndicator, right? They're going to go to the next guy or gal that has a deal in front of them. So I always tell people that the people that usually invest are us. We have a core group of 20 or 30 investors that always invest with us. And then it's usually the people within the last 90 days that I've talked to or our team has talked to that ultimately end up investing in our deal. So you need to constantly be marketing for money. You need to have deals that you can show in front of them because I'm going to tell you, they're not going to just sit on the sidelines.
Right.
They're going to be reaching out to other sponsors and looking to deploy capital. So, you know, I tell that story because I want people to understand that you have to have both. You know, you need to be marketing yourself. You need to get out there. Even if you're a shy guy or gal, you need to find your superpower, right? You know, to bring equity in, you know, whether that be social media. I see a lot of people that are great on social media and then you'll talk to them and they're about as shy as they get. It's crazy, but they've created this avatar for themselves and they've done an incredible job raising capital through some of these forums. Right. And so, you know, having both of those things humming at the same time, that is how you're able to scale. Right.
That's huge. But you know, you talked about team a lot, you know, you built a team, but the two pieces that I think from your discussion on top of that is, you know, process and mindset. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people, and if you go back to when you first started doing this, like, could you ever imagine that you were going to be saying that I'm going to buy 2,000 units in 1 year? You know, it probably wasn't in your mind at that point in time, but as you continue to learn and grow and get one deal after another and build your knowledge base, then all of a sudden your mind expands to the next larger goal. Yeah. And so you have to, we all start with our first deal, right? Mm-hmm. And then we move on from there. But so
I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah, right? Go ahead.
Because this is about mindset. No, when I got into this business, no, I didn't think that I knew that I'd eventually get there, but I thought it was going to take me a lot longer, right? And it's since taken me 6 years, but I'm still happy for what I've built so far, right? You know, but after I did that first deal, I knew I could scale. Right. Because the mystery of the process and raising capital and finding deals that now goes away. You're like, oh, I've done it. Wow. That's, you know, now you still have to operate, which is a whole nother part. Right. Let's just talk about acquisitions. You know, then you're like, man, I can rinse and repeat this. All I got to do is just have enough deal flow coming in and enough money coming in that I can buy any amount of deals. Right. You know, as long as they hit my box. You know, but so my mindset, the point of all that is my mindset shifted right after that first deal, because I knew that it was possible. And I knew, you know, like people, when I got into the business, Mike Becker was somebody that I looked up to. I still look up to this day.
Yeah. He's Kenny definitely Wolf, a leader, right?
You know, and Kenny Wolf, these guys, younger guys that I looked up to and smart, they're both smart as a whip, but they just went out and made it happen. And, you know, and you're just saying, hey, you know, yes, they're smart, but I'm just as smart as and capable as they are. And so I just need to mimic what they're doing. Right. And they put themselves out there and they hustled and they worked hard and they made the right connections. And a lot of that is all it is. It's a numbers business and it's a relationship business. Right. And so the numbers you can either learn or you can farm out to somebody that's good with numbers. Right. But ultimately, you're never going to be able to do this business from behind a desk. You got to get out there. You got to put yourself out there because, you know, ultimately you're going to have to build relationships with brokers and you're going to have to build relationships with investors, because ultimately people are investing in us a lot more so than the deal, right? They're saying, okay, hey, you know, the deal, you know, I like the area. I like the deal, but I like you guys more and I know you guys can pull it off, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you're never going to make everybody happy. But at the end of the day, right, the people that have stuck with us, these 20 or 30 core investors, right, have seen what we've been able to produce. And that's why they continue to, you know, reinvest with us. But, you know, yeah, no, you have to, your mindset definitely changes and evolves as you kind of get
That's huge. You know, I think that you said something there too, that listeners, you have to listen to what Ben said and you have to take action, is that you actually have to get out and meet a lot of other like-minded people. So, you know, whether you want to do your first passive deal, or whether you want to do your fifth or 10th passive deal, or you want to start actively going after deals, you know, once you surround yourself with a bunch of people that have already done it, what happens is exactly what Ben said, is that you look around the room and you're like, they did it. I can do it, you know? But if you just sit at home, you're going to think about all the things that you don't know about, and it's going to overwhelm you, and you're going to say, that's for somebody else. So you get around other people and you realize they're just other people that figured it out, and then you could follow in their path.
Had the guts to go out and do it. Make it happen, right? Yes. I mean, like, you know, there's so many people that you look at, just great entrepreneurs and great business people throughout the years, right? They took the risk. They took that first step to go out and do something great or revolutionize an industry or create an invention. And, you know, but you look back and none of them are, you know, 200 IQ or anything. They're just people that had a good idea and had a good team behind them in most cases, and then just had the guts to go out and make it happen. And I think that's the most important thing. And you brought up a good point, because a lot of passive investors are the ones that think, oh, I can just do it. I don't really need to network. You know, and I always tell them, you really do. I mean, obviously COVID has pushed a lot of things online that maybe were less online before that. And I think that will somewhat continue. But guess what? You know, vaccine rolls out, things start opening back up. These networking events are absolutely going to happen. So, you know, if you're a passive investor and you want to have enough deal flow coming in to find those deals that you like, then you're going to have to get in front of, because, you know, there's 20, 30, 40 people only on these deals. And so it's a tight-knit group. It's not like a stock where it's a liquid market and you can buy and sell. And, you know, you're never going to have a problem of scarcity buying a stock. Whereas getting into a syndication deal, you know, if you're not moving quick enough or you don't know that person and you just missed out on that that Austin, Texas deal that you really think was sexy and you always want to invest in Austin, it's because you didn't know the person that was looking in deals in Austin. And so passive need to get out there too and make it happen.
That's a great point. I mean, look, I'm 50 years old, and for the first 47 years, I did not have one person present me with an opportunity to invest in one of these deals. And then I got involved and started networking, and now I get deal after deal after deal, you know, in my email box. But if you're a passive investor, they are not going to show up in your email box unless you get out and meet other syndicators and start getting on their investor database. And even if you're not ready to pull the trigger, you know, if you were to start getting those emails and then start registering for some of those webinars, you're going to learn. And then when you are ready and you have the funds and you mentally prepared yourself, then you'll be ready to take action. So you talked about people, you know, look, I still invest that way. You know, I first look at the people that are involved in the deal, and, you know, there's a number of different things that I think about. You know, one is, do I genuinely like these people? You know, like, do I want to do business with these people? Whether I'm doing a passive investment or I'm partnering with other people as general partners, you know, is this a group of people that I know, like, and trust? Yep. And then secondly, like, okay, what's the experience level? You know, what have they done? And, you know, how does that help build my confidence? And so you guys have had a track record, and that first tranche of investors, that 20 or 30, they've had a positive experience with you. So now you've built in this deep-rooted trust with them that, and it probably helps you, even if you have a little bit of a side hiccup, that they give you more leeway because they've seen what you can do.
And one thing to kind of bring up too, right? No, you're totally right. Like, you know, I came from the sales world. You know, I always told people that, you know, I'm hawking the same stuff that the next guy's hawking, right? You know, I mean, but people bought from me because they liked me, right? And so it's the same thing with an investment opportunity. You have to build real relationships with people. It can't just be this, you know, very surface level stuff, right? I mean, you know, I know about my investors, you know, their kids going to college, where they're going on vacation. We talk, we chat, we go out to dinner, right? This is not just some, you know, I send them an email blast stuff, right? But, you know, because of that, right? Yes, there is going to be some patience and there, but we also like to have investors that have a little bit of track record as to how many deals they've invested with too, because the people that you're going to get the most questions from is the guy that's, it's his first deal or a gal, it's our first deal. They're putting less than the minimum, maybe 25K, which is fine. I'm not hating on anybody, but most of the time they either don't understand the process, or that might be, you know, a bulk of their retirement amount. And you end up getting jammed up just answering a lot of questions, right? So we prefer to have people that we like, know, and trust too on the investor side, or people that are more experienced passive investors, because they tend to understand that there's ebbs and flows in deals, and that timelines, you know, sometimes, you know, especially this year, can be delayed, right? You know, because who knew in January that COVID was going to shut the whole economy down?
I know.
So, you know, so you just have to kind of take that into consideration too, right? You know, but yeah, no, it's definitely, at the end of the day, it's a relationship business, and you got to go out there, passives and syndicators alike, and create those, or you're just going to get, it's just going to be this behind the keyboard stuff, and you're never going to be able to really scale or do much of a business that way.
That's great. And, you know, you bring up this, you know, the situation, COVID, and I don't want the show to be a long-winded piece on it, but, you know, I talked to a lot of syndicators and was like, well, look, we're at the tail end of the real estate cycle. Like, you know, we're going to go into a recession at some point. Don't know what's going to prompt it. And talk about how resilient multifamily should be in that, you know, in that downturn. But here we are. I never, ever, ever would have imagined that we would be owning an asset class where the government tells you that, hey, the renters, they don't have to pay and you can't do anything about it. And now really, it's going on 9 months. And so to see the performance that, you know, yeah, there's late payments, there's no payments, there's people taking advantage of the system, but in general, the asset class is held up remarkably well.
No, because considering, okay, so say we could evict people, right? And we just had a slowdown. This is why we all, why I, at least I got into multifamily, right? You know, it was pretty resilient back in 8, 9, and 10, right? Now, did asset prices go down? Did rents go down a little bit? Yeah, absolutely. Ever across the board, that happened, right? But COVID is something different. Nobody could really plan for this. And, you know, I would say for the most part, we've dodged a bullet. But, you know, I would say not to get political about it, but if the politicians will get their act together and offer a little bit of relief, you know, because at the end of the day, right, not only does people that are landlords, we don't just have a mortgage to pay. I love these people who are like, give rent and loan right. forgiveness. Right. You know, right. my loan is only half of the expenses that I have every month, right? You know, it's not the whole thing. Right. I've got employees that have families too. Right. If people aren't paying their rent, they can't feed their families either. It's a trickle down effect.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, but overall, with all the chips, you know, against us, it's done pretty well. I mean, right. I know people that are in hospitality. I know people that are in office and retail. They're some of them are getting killed.
Right.
You know, and so at the end of the day, I think it all proved our thesis. Right. Which was. You know, it's the hierarchy of needs, right? You've got, you know, water, food, and shelter are the three most important things that somebody needs, right? And I think people prioritize that, and especially prioritize it once the unemployment insurance was beefed up a little bit, because really collections were about as good as they could have been in April, May, and June, right? And that was mainly due to that $300 a week more that people were getting, or was it $600? I don't know.
It was a lot of money.
It was a significant amount of money. And people were paying on time, you know, but then that goes away and some people start creaking, right? Because the other thing that's different from 8, 9, and 10 is that the restaurants and the bars and a lot of the retail are closed down. Now, from 8, 9, and 10, people that are around, right, those things were open. Some of them might have been slowed down, but you were still going out to eat.
Right.
People still were definitely going to the bar, you know, and they were still shopping some, right? So, you know, people kind of say, well, that's why I wanted to be in B and A, but it's hindsight's 2020. You know, everybody was, you know, trying to insulate their portfolio from another 8, 9, and 10 type recession. And that's not what happened. We had a forced recession due to a pandemic that has created a dynamic shift that nobody could ever have accounted for. But, you know, I'd say still multifamily is behind industrial. I would say one of the best asset classes this year, for sure.
Absolutely. So before you got involved in real estate investing in like 2013, what did you do beforehand?
Sales, IT, business development. What?
So for large software companies?
No, we sold hardware.
Hardware. Okay.
You know, I sold to Fortune 500 companies and I sold to the government. You know, think FBI, those types of guys. You know, we sold a lot of biometric and security and ID equipment. And so, you know, I had to do a lot of presentations. I had to do a lot of networking. I had to do a lot of traveling. I had passed out business cards. I went to conferences all the time, right? So I always tell people, I'm doing the exact same thing that I was doing then. I'm just selling investment opportunities now, right?
And you're an owner.
Well, and I'm an owner too, right? So yeah, right. Of course. But, you know, I'm able to kind of segue the skill set that I had built in the 15 years that I was in IT into commercial real estate. And, you know, that's why I enjoy stuff like this. And it's a way for me to kind of give back too and just, you know, impart some wisdom that maybe I've learned the hard way over my 7 years in the business.
Absolutely. You know, there's people that come into this business from all different angles and, you know, leveraging the experience you have up to that point in time is critical. You can't take, maybe not all of it's going to carry forward. But a lot of those experiences and a lot of those relationships and your past experience is going to help you in this business as well. And, the other thing is you talked about those 7 deals that you guys did, you know, there's different challenges on different deals. And then you learn from that and, you know, you can look at another deal and be like, oh, this is another one of those. And this is.
And you fine tune, right? You know, I always tell people, you know, passive investors, close your ears, right? You know, my first deal, I didn't
know. Now they're listening up big time.
I didn't know what the heck I was doing. right? And I'm not saying that people doing their first deal don't know what they're doing, but you don't know what you don't know, right? Any guru that says that they can teach you 100% about the process is lying to you, right? A lot of the training that's out there, the mentoring that's out there, is focused on finding deals, raising equity, and underwriting, right? They never tell you, what do you have to do on day one, right? What do I do now? I got right. the deal to close. Now what do I do, right? Because there's specific things that are very, very important that need to happen in a certain sequence. And luckily, I was partnered with a gentleman that it wasn't his first rodeo. And that's why you always have to, you rely a lot on your partners, especially when you're starting off. But, you know, I always kind of say each deal that I've done, good or bad, you know, I'm learning and I'm fine tuning and I'm making sure that I don't make that same mistake twice. That's you're going to make mistakes, right? It's how you pivot and you make sure that you don't make those mistakes the second time, you know, because not everybody's perfect. I think a lot of people were perceived as being rock stars the last 10 years, but really they were just riding an appreciation wave, right? I think this decade is going to be the decade of the operator. And you have to know how to operate in asset management and property manage your properties, because you're going to have to extract value in creative ways and be very, very tight at your management. That is the only way you're going to make profit in this decade. You're still going to get appreciation, don't get me wrong, but it's certainly not going to be like it was back in the last decade. And so, you know, I've learned all that, and I've actually did 7 deals now, but I had done 10 deals currently. Or I've done 10 deals throughout my career, and each one has been unique, and I've learned a lot along the way, the right things and the wrong things to do. So
it's a good point. And, you know, thinking about that, you know, property management and running the deal and managing the deal, you know, networking isn't just about getting the investors and getting the deal done, but, you know, when you're out there networking as a syndicator, you're meeting all kinds of other syndicators and you're building relationships with them. And so you've got the learning of your 7 deals, but you also can pick up the phone and call somebody and be like, hey man, I think you went through something like this before. I'm going through it right now. How'd you handle it? And this industry is amazing about helping each other.
No, and you know, we're all business owners, right?
We
have a very entrepreneurial mindset, I would say, amongst us, you know, us multifamily and commercial owners in general, really, you know. I 100% agree. There's 2 guys I could think. I won't name their names, but if I ever get jammed up or I have a question or, hey, how do you handle this or how did you handle this? I pick up the phone. I don't know everything. I wish I could say that I did, but, you know, the business is changing.
But and that's smart.
It's changed even this year.
Look, right? You could have an ego. I don't want to call and ask somebody for, you know, but that's just dumb, because it's not just, you know, you're just trying to maximize the valuation on your investment for you and all your limited partners. Yeah. So that's huge. Now, one of the things that will be interesting to see, I think, moving forward is the migration from a population from, you know, California, New York, Chicago, other densely populated areas into markets such as Texas, Arizona, Carolinas, Florida. You know, that shift in population, you know, I don't know how to put a number on that, but yes, there's going to be definitely a, you know, a management component to it. But I think there's also going to be an influx of people in these high growth markets that will make up for some of the potential downfall that would have been there had this migration not happened.
Yes, you're right. Right. You know, and you bring up a good point, right? And I kind of touched on this earlier, right? I think the two need to coexist, right? You will still always in real estate, it trends upward in almost all cases. If you look at it over the long enough time period, right? You know, and really we didn't see asset values go down at all more than maybe 5%. And that was like in May, right? When people were just struggling and trying to get a deal across the finish line. Right. But you are in certain, I would say, I'm just going to use Texas because we live in Texas, right?
Sure.
It's already happened the last 10 or 15 years. And yes, this is accelerating that. So you have more demand for your rental product.
Right.
So I'd agree. That's going to create appreciation. But what's also happening is things are going up in price. taxes are killing deals. Insurance is killing deals. Yep. And, you know, I mean, just being on the front line, both on the property management side as well as on the ownership side, you know, the cost of everything, labor included, is going up. So, you know, and then you have asset values that are going up. So you're buying at lower cap rates, right? So you're going to have a little bit of tighter of a play. And so I think on a total return standpoint, you're probably going to be all right. In fact, I think most of these deals on a total return standpoint are going to be fine. Cash flow is going to be a little bit tighter to extract, right? But I think once again, on a total return standpoint, which takes into consideration what the appreciation is going to be and how much you can sell it in the future, right? I think all these deals are going to be money,
right?
You know, but you bring up a good point. There's a balancing act. And I think even within Texas, there's better markets than not.
Right? Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I have the philosophy, and, you know, none of us has a crystal ball, right? But I think that there's going to be another stimulus package come out. I think that when that runs out, that we're going to have some true permanent unemployment, and we're going to have more bankruptcies that actually come to fruition, and it's going to get a little bit harder. But the piece that I don't know is, okay, does the influx of people into Texas like make up for that? You know, because I see with our property, we have tenants that are either struggling or taking advantage of the system. I don't know for sure. There's probably a combination of both. But every time we have a unit come available, there's somebody waiting to come in. Like, we're 95 to 100% occupied always. It's more about, you know, collections right now for us. And so if that trend continues, then that could help make up for some of the, you know, the challenges that I think are going to come, but who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I think nobody really has a crystal ball, right? I think, you know, time will tell. I do agree with you. I think a stimulus package is definitely going to happen. You know, who knows how quickly, especially with the holidays and the way that the politicians like to take months and months off at a time, you know, when that's going to happen, but I would say definitely Q1. That's probably going to help people for another quarter or two. But Q3, Q4 could potentially, if things don't get back on track, or maybe the vaccine gets off track or something else happens, Q3, Q4 could be interesting, right? You know, but I think you also brought up a good point too, right? Occupancy has been pretty full, but it's all about collections and delinquency, right?
Right.
Are tenants actually paying the rent? Yeah. And I think in some cases they're not. And unless those people get a lifeline from a stimulus package, they are going to prioritize those other two things ahead of shelter, which is food and water.
Right.
You know, if you had a decision between I'm going to put food on my table for my children or I'm going to pay this landlord my rent, what kind of decision do you think they're going to make?
Yeah, absolutely. And if all of a sudden more evictions start happening and there's not, you know, the eviction moratorium ends at the end of the year, then that helps the cash flow perspective, but it certainly increases the cost. You know, if you increase the turnover on these units, you've got to repaint the prop, you know, the interior, clean it up, you know, so there's extra costs associated with that versus just renewing a paying tenant for another year. I mean, that's.
And I'll bring that up because I'm on the front lines on the property management side, right? You know, those folks that have been living there for free, right? They're also not calling maintenance to figure anything out too, because guess what? They don't want to let anybody in their unit. So those units are rough.
They're going to
be
point.
Real rough. And, you know, I mean, they're usually not in the best of moods either. So they're probably going to damage some stuff too. So, you know, that turn that probably should have cost you 3 to 5 is probably going to cost you 5 to 7 now, you know? And then if you within a month or two versus spread out over a 12 month period, what I'm suggesting to my clients and what we're doing is you need, you know, probably into Q1, Q2, you need to have some money set aside to be able to turn those units, right? Because otherwise they're going to sit vacant for quite some time, right? You know, until you do have the money to actually turn that, you know, because you can imagine, right? If you've got, you know, 25 evictions, $5,000 a piece, you know, what was that? I can't come up with them. $125,000.
You know, I can see, you guys can't see him, but I can see him. He did not pull out his calculator. That was on his head.
A long day. I'm like, wait, what is that again? I mean, some people aren't going to just have $125,000 set aside, especially the smaller owners, right?
Right.
And so you just have to take that into consideration that that'll eventually happen. It might happen over the course of a month or two. And those turns are going to be more expensive than you anticipated them being because those units are going to be rougher.
Absolutely.
And that could put some hurting on some people.
Yeah.
And that could potentially blow up some sales too. Because, you know, if you're in escrow and all of a sudden you have to evict these people, or maybe they skip because they're going to get evicted, or even worse, you know, the seller doesn't disclose all this stuff, just says, hey, don't worry about it, we're not going to evict you. And then you buy the property, and then all of a sudden you've got 25 people that you were supposed to have evicted or are in the process of being evicted. Now your occupancy drops by whatever percentage overnight. So yeah, just be aware of that too on the acquisition process.
That's great a point. Yeah. Hey, so I don't know if you have an answer here. I'm going to bring up a topic that I've heard from a bunch of syndicators as of late. All right. So financing, and I know, look, I'm not going to let you have the answer. It all depends on the deal. Like, so, cause that could be the answer. I'm not giving you that out.
All right.
So most people, you know, like to do agency debt, non-recourse, if they can, if the deal allows for it. But there's this, you know, discussion now, go with a floater with a cap or go with long-term fixed rate debt. So, you know, both agency products, both have a long term. So the term, even on the floater, the term could be 10 years, yep. You know? So, but it's a floater, you buy a cap, so it can't go above a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And the benefit to doing that, and the reason why people are starting to talk about doing the floaters, is because after a year, the prepayment penalty is only 1% versus either having yield maintenance or a step down with 5% or 4% prepayment penalty on it. So what's your view on that?
I've seen yield maintenance be as high as 15 to 20%. So people need to, and we're in Fannie jail right now, you know, which is what we kind of call it, where there's two deals that we have in our portfolio that I could exit at a very good, you know, return to our investors, but you start baking in the prepayment penalty and it just nukes pretty much all of your profit. Right. And so you need to take that into consideration. You know, I like the floater, and that's because I've had too many situations where that doesn't allow me to be flexible when I want to exit, right? You feel like you're kind of locked in, at least for that first 3 to 5 years, until that yield maintenance kind of gets to a little bit more of a manageable amount. And maybe the value has gone up a little bit more just to offset that. It does depend on the deal though, right? Because
I know that's always going to be the case.
I'm going to tell you why though, right? Because it's not because of the asset itself, like, oh, it's 200 units versus 100 units. It depends on your business plan, right? You know, maybe it's a deal, you know, that you're fairly confident within the first 3 to 5 years, you're going to have put enough value into that property that you probably will exit. You know, but you want to do a more semi-permanent thing versus, say, a bridge loan, right? Because it's going to get a better interest rate, right? Because the floater does have better interest too, right?
The other piece that I, you know, the difference between the bridge loans and, you know, the floater, the fixed, you just call it agency long-term debt. The thing that I like about that is that where I saw people get hurt, you know, from my loan trading days is, if the loan comes due in a shitty economy,
mm-hmm, you're screwed.
You have no leverage, and whatever the financial institution that you're working with is going to screw you.
Yeah.
And it's not just because they want to, you know, take advantage of you, but they can because they have all the leverage, but they've shifted gears. Like, all their staff is now working on troubled, you know, debt. And mm-hmm, so they don't really want to write a lot of new loans. So they make it very difficult. And so they'll come back to you and say, look, your property was worth X, but now it's worth X less 2 million. So you got to bring 2 million to the table or else we're not going to refi it, you know? Yeah.
It puts you in a tough spot, right? You know what I mean? I think we, cause we're in the kind of the syndication world. So you're going to take, probably some of your listeners are not syndicators, right? Maybe they want to, maybe they're long-term owners. Maybe they want to buy their own deal. I think that also gets played into it too, right? How long are you going to hold onto that property should dictate in a lot of ways what debt you put on it, right?
Right.
As well as the condition of the asset. I always tell people, if you're doing kind of a heavy value add or a semi-heavy value add, you should look at bridge, you know, and a lot of, I know there's a lot of stigma around bridge and some of the bridge guys have pulled out of the market this year. So it's been a little bit harder to find quality bridge lenders. But if you're going to flip out of it in a year or two into either you're going to just sell it or you're going to go into a perm, you know, because you've increased the value, right? Why wouldn't you do a bridge? Like, you know, don't put Fannie Mae 12-year note on that deal if you're going to increase the value a lot, right? Because, yeah, you're just going to get nuked on the prepayment penalty if you ever go to try to sell the deal. And so, you know, I always look at debt as a tool. You have to have the right tool for the right problem. Right. And you can't just get caught up on one type of debt versus another. And so that's kind of how I look at it. I know that I probably didn't really answer your question. I like all of them.
I think it just depends on the opportunity.
I think you did.
You know, I think I would add to what you said, though, that, you know, you could have a great, you know, value add story that bridge would be a good, you know, product for it. But if you feel like we're at the tail end of real estate cycle or that, you know, a recession could be coming up, then I think you have to play that into consideration as well, because, you know, the bridge lenders are always like, all right, man, it's 3-1-1, you know, 3-year fix and then 2 1-year extensions. And all right, well, you know, what would prevent you from giving me a 1-year extension? Oh, well, we always give you the extension. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So now all of a sudden you're in year 3 and you're in a terrible economy, that's when they say, no, we're not going to extend it. We're just going to take your property if you can't come up with the extra equity. You know, so that's,
and I agree with you, but I also take the other side of the argument and say, why is it taking you 3 years to get your to execute your business plan too, right? You know, we've had bridge deal, we're getting out in and out in 18 months. You know, we have 3 years just in case something crazy happens, but it shouldn't take an additional 12 months to flip out of it, right? You know, I mean, so they give you the 3 years because really you should have enough time to get in there and do what you need to do.
That's a good point.
But you have to read the fine language down at the bottom, because there will be exit tests and stuff that they'll put onto you where they say, well, you didn't meet your exit test, so therefore we're not going to grant you an extension, or if we do, it's going to cost you an insane amount of money to do it.
Right.
You know, so yeah, take that into consideration, Bridge. There's risks on both sides, and I don't say. People think that permanent debt is risk-free, and I say that that's a fallacy, because that I guess doesn't allow you to have multiple exit strategies.
Yeah, your flexibility gets taken away from you for sure.
You know, and then my book, that's a risk too, right? Yeah. Because if I have some guy that comes along and is like, I'll give you $100,000 a door to buy your property, and I bought it at 60, but guess what? You know, 30, 40, 50% of my profit just gets nuked by a prepayment penalty. I'm going to think twice about selling it.
Right.
And then maybe the next year asset values go down. Right. And so now I missed out on the opportunity to sell it to this guy, and anybody that I want to sell it to now will only buy it for 80.
Yeah.
That's a risk.
Yep.
So,
and talking about the floater fix, I mean, that's the big advantage right now that everybody's talking about with the floater. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously if rates jump at some point, then people may say, oh man, I wish I wasn't.
And they will. It will almost inevitably happen, right? Everybody's complaining about fixed permanent debt now. And why didn't we know about this floater before? And in 5 years, the interest rates probably have crept up, and they're going to say, why the heck did somebody try to sell me this Freddie floater?
It's funny.
You know,
So talk about fear. Talk about time when you were scared and you actually pushed through and made a decision to move forward anyway.
I'll give you a really good example. I mean, we had some fear this year too. I think a lot of people did, right? You know, into March, going into April, the world was collapsing, you know, people are going on lockdown. I didn't know what to think of, right? But I think everybody kind of felt that too. So I'll give you one that was kind of personal to me. So Hurricane Harvey blew in, and you'd heard this story. This is the one that you heard at the meetup, right? Yeah. I had a property in Beaumont. Beaumont is 90 miles east of Houston for people that are listening. And it's a blue collar community. I think there's 450,000 people in the MSA, so it's not huge, but good working folks. And it was a great little property, 92 units. We had just gotten done with our value add or CapEx plan. We had put about $600K into the property, been sitting on it for 3 months, paying out distributions. It was a great little deal. And then Hurricane Harvey hits in August of, what was that, 2017. And it flooded the property. It was a 92-unit property, and we took 33 units offline because they were completely destroyed.
Wow.
Now, luckily, we had flood insurance. But at the time, this is what happens, okay? So I'm here in Houston. Houston also got nailed by Harvey. So my parents' home had flooded. Our house had flooded.
Oh, wow.
My best friend's house had flooded. And then I get a text from my property manager, oh, and by the way, your property is flooded. And I was, I mean, you can imagine it was like getting kicked in the pants. I mean, I almost collapsed. I didn't know.
Was that your first property, the Beaumont property?
That was my first deal.
Holy cow.
And, you know, I didn't know what the hell to do. And so, you know, I mean, of course I called my business partner who was obviously a little bit more in tune. He's like, we got to get an insurance claim in. Everybody and their mom's going to be getting it. You know, we got to move fast, And I, to this day, I'll thank him for doing that. You know, so I call up our insurance broker, who's our friend and business partner to this day. His name's Dan Kadurka with Strategic Insurance Group. And this guy jumped into the fire for me. I was like, Dan, I have all these things. My world is collapsing. Help me, please, right? And you can't do this with your Allstate agent. He doesn't give a crap. This guy actually cared. He was on the phone for 8 hours with FEMA, setting up all of our claims and getting all the inspectors lined up. And essentially put everything on a silver platter for me. And to this day, I'll be forever grateful because at that point, my world was falling apart, you know, and I didn't know what to do. And I thought I was going to lose everything because really, if we didn't have flood insurance on that deal, I would not be here talking to you right now because I would have lost everything at that point.
Holy cow. Have you done all your other deals with Dan?
Yes. Yeah. I won't do it because not only he's the best in the business, but at this point, I would say he saved my butt.
Yeah.
You know, there was people that up until probably last year, they were still doing the rehab from Harvey. These were people that either didn't get their claim in or didn't have flood insurance. And he was the one who talked, we didn't have to have flood insurance on this deal. Yeah, it was in Beaumont. It was close to the coast, but it wasn't in a floodplain. And that's what people that are outside of Houston and Beaumont and the areas that got hit, like, why didn't everybody have flood insurance? Not everywhere down here is a flood zone. And so why would you pay for insurance that's not needed? Right.
So why did you?
Because Dan talked me into it. Right. and it was on a 92 unit property. It was an $8,000 expense. Right. And it paid out $2 million on an $8,000 expense. And so to this day, forever grateful for him. But at the end of the day, you know, that could have gone wildly wrong.
That's a huge story.
And it was still one of those things that, you know, yeah, he went through the claim process, but then you have to go solicit bids from general contractors. You had to go through the whole FEMA process, which was just, you're dealing with the government folks. It was horrible. You know, but we got those claims in so quickly ahead of a lot of other people that, you know, we were remediating. So this hit beginning of September. We were remediating within a week just because we had good general contractor contacts and he was just floating us. We got our first payment by September and we were updating the property by October and we were fully leased up by March. So, you know, and then, obviously looking at it in hindsight, there's people, like I said, up until last year, and there probably might even be people right now that were still updating their property from Harvey and we got it done in 6 months. So, you know, I feel very grateful that could have turned out a lot worse, but that was probably when I was scared the most in this business because you just didn't know what to do. I had no idea what I was doing.
Wow. Wow. You know. Thankfully you had somebody.
Yeah. That, I had a couple people that knew what to, hey, we're going to get through this. This is what we got to do. you know, and they kind of guided me down that path, and, you know, I'll be forever grateful for that.
How bad was your home? I saw some homes in Harvey really where, yeah, where we, it was we, like up to the, you know, six feet high.
We had 8 feet. We lost everything.
You had 8 feet high in your house?
Yeah. We lost everything. It was a bad experience, man. I'm telling you, and it's a longer story than this. I wrote a chapter in a book about it. I mean, it was a very bad time in my life.
Dude, every time I've seen you, you're like this upbeat, like happy-go-lucky kind of guy.
Hey, man,
like,
I'm just happy to be living, you know, because it could have been a lot worse for me that day, man.
It could push you into depression, you know. Yeah, some people get all the cards, you know, dealt against them, and you can kind of go retreat and run into a hole. But instead, one, you had some people to help you out. And two, it sounds like, you know, you just focused on what actions could you take that was positive.
Yeah. And you have to kind of compartmentalize a little bit too, right? You know, because there's just so many things that are happening. And if you let one thing distract you, you're going to lose focus. But, you know, but yeah, luckily you have to have the right team. And I'll drill that in. If anybody is listening and they take anything away, is have the right team. This is a team sport. And that team doesn't mean necessarily employees that you have, right? That could just be your partners. That could be the vendors that you use. You know, surround yourself with winners that know what they're doing and have experience in this market, because there so many bad things can happen. You have to mitigate that risk in every possible way. You know.
I'll talk about that. Take that to another level is when I first got into the business, I joined a multifamily mentorship group. I'm still part of that group. And some people have contacted me on Instagram. They say, you know, hey, Darren, did you find value in that? And I'm like, you know, the biggest value that I gained was the network. You know, I met so many great people, and those people told me, you know, here's who I use for property management. Here's who I use for an attorney. Here's who I use for, you know,
rehab. Power of the ecosystem,
and,
right?
Yeah. And, you know? And then those partners, they have skin in the game because it's not just your deal. You know, if I was calling as a one-off, then all right, if they screw up Darren's deal, well, what's really going to blow back on us, you know? But if we know that he's networked with all these other people, we know he's going to talk to all those people. So we want him to say good things about us.
Absolutely. You know, it's a niche community as it is, right? Even amongst us owners and syndicators, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody, and, you know, everybody's had their challenges. There's nobody that's going to be a rock star at every single deal, you know, but vendors definitely, right? You know, and we were a part of the same group. We won't name any names, but, you know, I'm sure maybe your listeners might have known, but, you know, that's where I got my start too, right? You meet your investors, you meet potential vendors, and, you know, you're asking for referrals, and really as a passive investor, that's important too, right? That's where you can kind of build up your database of potential syndicators and get on people's emails.
Absolutely.
So I see value in the ecosystem for sure.
Absolutely. So, hey, talking about that, let's segue to you guys are actually putting on a conference in Houston. Talk about that conference. When is it? What's it called? What's the goal of the conference? Who should go?
So this will be our fourth one that we did. We actually had to cancel the last two. We were going to be in San Francisco and Boston this last year. We had the last one in Houston the beginning of this year, February. And we're going to have the next one in Houston in February 27th. You know, the Westin City Center, you know, which is right up the road from us. Check us out, mfinvestornetwork.com. So really the point of the conference is not to sell anything. In fact, we're an anti-sell conference. We're not up there to pitch you any kind of training or mentoring or sell you a product or service. We have vendors and their sponsors, and they'll do their 2-minute pitch, and then they'll have their booths in the back. You can talk to them about their products and services, and all of them are great. But what we're there to do is to provide value through education, through networking, you know, get people up there on panels that are going to tell real world stories of how this stuff is getting done, right? From syndicators to brokers, to, you know, how do you do 1031s, to how do you use your IRA to invest in syndications, to if I want to use a title company, who do I use, right? Legal, all those things are going to be there. And it's a 1-day event. You know, we're big on networking, so we try to, you know, include a lot of opportunities that people can kind of mingle and get to know each other. We're going to be COVID safe. We're going to be providing masks. We're going to socially distance. But we got to get back out there. And once again, it's not so we can sell anything to you. We just want to get back to some kind of normalcy, right, in the market and allow people to kind of, you know, get back to business. And so we're going to try to give it a shot. February 27, check us out. Try the coupon code DISRUPT. You know, you should be able to get some get something off at checkout there. You know, but yeah, we'd love everybody to come out there. We had 400 people there in this February. And we also had the mayor of Houston that talked, Mr. Sylvester Turner. You know, and so we were pretty proud that that he graced us with his presence. I got a picture with him. I got to chat with him.
That's awesome. You know, I was not able to make it to the one in 2020. I hope to make it to the 2021. But I've talked to a lot of people that went that they, you know, it was just a breath of fresh air because they said, just to your point, that it didn't feel like a sales pitch, that they, you know, came and they met a lot of great people and they saw a lot of familiar faces and they met a lot of new faces. And I, you know, you didn't say this, but I think that that's part of, you know, you're giving value to other people by bringing people together. And then if people have a positive experience, they're going to remember, you know what, Ben and Frass, they, you know, they helped me out. They helped me connect with other people in the business, and it's going to, you know, cement you guys in their mind as being, you know, strong players and people that
value. It's not just a pitch, right? You know, we really do have an abundance mindset, and, you know, I feel like there's enough deals, there's enough money out there that we can all kind of coexist and have fun and make some money and provide for our families. And so I, you know, I'll open it up, and we have a lot of other syndicators that come there, right? Because they know that there's a lot of passive investors that come, and, you know, some people would cringe at that, but I say, why not? You know, because, you know, some of those other syndicators, they end up being my partners on deals too, right? So it's not this thing where, you know, we have to keep everything close to the chest, right? Let's all grow together, you know? And so that's what it's Multifamily Investor Network is the name of it, right? You know, but that was the reason why me and Ferris and Kenny Wolf, who's our JV partner on it, you know, put it together, because that was something that was a little bit different in the market. You know, and it's a loss leader for us. We don't make any money on it because we're not selling anything. So
the two websites they can go to learn more about that, can you repeat them?
Yeah, go to mfinvestornetwork.com. Okay. You know, check us out there. We're still lining up some speakers. You know, we'll have Mr. Neil Bawa back out there. You know, we're getting some other people lined up. We're still trying to get the mayor. He's been a little busy this year. You know, but we'll have some great folks, and we'll have some good panelists too. I think people really like the panelists because it's real world people that are doing things. You can ask questions. We always have a Q&A section. And so, we're still fleshing that out a little bit right now, but, you know, check us out, keep updated. We have also have a Facebook page too, if they want to check it out.
Awesome. I should have asked you this beforehand, but is there a discount code that they could use?
Disrupt. Yeah. Use Disrupt.
There you go.
Discount on it.
All right. Yeah, there you go. So, hey, I was going to ask you what's your big stretch goal, but you already said it earlier on. I mean, 2021 is going to be a huge year, 2,000 units. So that's huge. What do you do outside of business for fun?
I like to play golf. I like to fish. I like to hang out with my daughter. Pre-COVID, I like to go go to an occasional concert. You know, I love baseball. I love football. I love going and doing those things. Obviously, those have been kind of put on hold, but I'm hopeful next year we can kind of get back into doing that because we enjoy that as well.
Awesome. So golf, where do you? I'm kind of 85, 95.
Where I'm at too, man. Yeah, I'm not Tiger Woods by any means, but I do like to get out there. I like to have a good time. You know, drink a couple beers and just that's kind of my awesome. That and fishing is. Yeah. My way where I can kind of combine fun and be out in the and just the you know open air and get out of the office a little bit and be amongst the guys and
exactly. Well, hey, you bring your clubs up to Dallas. We got to play and I'll
do it,
I'll
man. Think about I got, the same them, I got them in the back. I got awesome. Them in the back.
Awesome. Well, Ben, I really appreciate you coming on. If people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Cool. Yeah. Via email is probably the best way. I'm pretty responsive. I hope to be sometimes, right? You know, sometimes a little bit busier than others, but ben@disruptequity.com is the best way to get in touch with me. And then you can check us out at www.disruptequity.com as well on our website.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate the relationship with you and for us, and hope to work with you at some point in the future. You guys have a great reputation. You know, keep showing the way. I mean, this is an amazing business because, you know, people like you that are 3, 4, 5 years ahead of me, like you help the next guy and then I help the next guy. And like, and it's just, it's a great business that way. So listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.